to me your secrets. Show me your nightmares. All cats are gray in the dark, dear. Whether or not you dare.
Welcome to All Cats Are Gray in the Dark. I'm your host, April Simmons. This podcast contains true cases of graphic violent crimes and other stories of a dark nature. Please be advised that due to the subject matter and violent, sometimes sexual content and obscene language, this podcast is not for children or the faint of heart.
Come here!
How are you today, sir?
I am feeling fat and sassy.
Tuesday's coming. Do you want to go see a movie?
Poor Choppy McMoots!
People are going to be like, we tuned into the wrong podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. You did anyway, but it's fine. Stay. Come in and stay a while. Come in and know me better, man. Oh, it's almost time.
I know it is. I can feel it in the air. I can feel... the Christmas present spirit in the air.
Yes.
I can feel him coming in the air tonight.
Boop, boop, boop.
Oh.
All right, I'm sorry.
Think we're just delirious at this point, and I think people can probably tell.
Yeah. That's every time we record. We're both just overworked and tired 24/7.
Yeah. And now I have a bad back on top of that, and hip on top of that.
Yeah.
Like, yep, here we go. Old age coming.
I'm just tired. I'm so tired of unpacking. I think I'm just literally going to donate 90% of what I own if I ever move again.
Yeah. See, we pared everything down and got rid of most of our furniture when we moved into a tiny apartment before. But then still, somehow it took like 18 trips back and forth to get all of the stuff from that tiny apartment to here. I'm like, How did we have that? But how did we fit that much stuff in that tiny garage apartment? I do not know. I still don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like my waves are not very high. I'm probably going to have to turn the volume way up.
My waves are too high, like always.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this. It's a really, really heavy one. Trigger warning, gory warning. It's a really fucked up story. But that's what we're doing here, I guess.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't be here if you didn't like some fucked up stuff.
And it's going to be a two-parter, so get ready. You're not going to hear the rest of the story till next time. That's just how it is. Yep. And I guess I will start as per usual. Often referred to as the Rampart Street Murders, the death of Addie Hall and Zach Bowen shocked the city of New Orleans in 2006. I'd only heard of this story like a few months back. I was like, how is this from New Orleans in the South? And I've never heard of the story before. Hall and Bowen had gained notoriety for staying in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina in 2005, which garnered them national media attention. In fact, it seemed like a romantic story of a couple who fell in love during one of the greatest natural disasters in New Orleans history. However, there was a dark side to Hall and Bowen's relationship, one that involved excessive drinking and drug use that eventually led to violent fights. It was in the early hours of October 5th, 2006, that the relationship took a fatal turn. When Bowen strangled Hall in their French Quarter apartment, the murder would remain a secret until 12 days later, when Bowen took his own life and left behind a full confession of what he had done. The violent murder of Addie Hall and the suicide of Zach Bowen have spawned television shows, a documentary, and endless speculation on the internet. This list covers the verifiable facts of Hall and Bowen's relationship, their deaths, and the macabre aftermath that followed. This isn't going in like a list order. This bits and pieces from different places. So
yeah,
I apparently didn't take out the fact that when it said this list covers this, like, no, it's not a list. Sorry. Whoops. I left that in there accidentally. Your turn to read some.
At approximately 8:30 p.m. on October 17, 2006, police received a call from the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel about an apparent suicide. Someone had jumped from the hotel's rooftop bar and landed on top of a parking garage 7 stories below. Police were able to ID the victim as 28-year-old Zach Bowen. Bowen had placed in the front pocket of his pants a plastic bag containing a note, army dog tags, and a key. The note was signed by Bowen and stated the following: "This is not accidental. I had to take my own life to pay for the one I took." Bowen also wrote that police needed to go to his apartment at 826 North Rampart Street to investigate. It was later learned that Bowen had a final drink at the Omni Royal Bar, then paced nervously before jumping from the roof. Wow.
Upon entering the apartment, police found notes spray painted on the walls, including one that read, "I'm a total failure." When police entered the kitchen, they found an arrow spray painted on the front of the stove. They had been told to look in the oven, per Bowen's note. In a gruesome discovery, police found 2 pots on the stove containing Addie Hall's head, hands, and feet. Hall's arms and legs had been seasoned and then placed on trays in the oven. Much misinformation would follow, but autopsies of Hall and Bowen later confirmed that there was no evidence of cannibalism. So I don't know if he was planning to try to eat her, or I don't know. But the fact that he seasoned her is weird. It was eventually learned from Bowen's signed confession written in Hall's journal that he had strangled Hall to death on October 5th, 2006, and then left her body in their bed for several days. Bowen eventually dismembered Hall's body in the apartment bathtub, but then cooked her remains in an attempt to dispose of her body. Police also noted that the apartment's air conditioning was blasting in an effort to slow down decomposition of Hall's remains.
Holy crap. So, I don't, so he didn't even, it doesn't even sound like he necessarily planned on eating her. He was just trying to, like, find a way that a dead body wouldn't be noticeable. What was he going to do? Just eventually, like, slowly send it down the garbage disposal? Like, I don't understand. Like, yeah. I mean, eating it would probably work better at getting rid of it than just cooking it. But maybe that was it. He couldn't bring himself to eat it, and so he said, fuck it. I'm gonna get caught.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's fucking wild.
I know. Just his reasoning with everything just seems way out there. But it may be because he was on substances and stuff. Yeah. So.
All right. Bowen's 8-page confession written in Hall's journal described both his feelings about the murder and what he did in the 2 weeks between killing Hall and jumping from the rooftop bar. Bowen wrote, "I scared myself not by the action of calmly strangling the woman I loved for 1.5 years, but my entire lack of remorse. I've known forever how horrible a person I am." Bowen also explained that he had withdrawn $1,500 from the bank following the murder, which he said he spent on good food, good drugs, and good strippers. Bowen apparently knew he was going to die by suicide and wanted to enjoy the final days of his life as much as possible. During Bowen's autopsy, it was discovered that his body was covered in cigarette burns. According to the written confession, Bowen had burned himself for every year of his life to mark all of the mistakes he had made.
Zach Bowen, yeah, I know. This whole thing's really heavy, I told you. Zach Bowen grew up in California and moved to New Orleans while he was in high school to live with his father. Bowen reportedly struggled with depression and school, but was able to finish high school in New Orleans. After graduation, he got a job bartending when he was 18 years old. It was during his time bartending that Bowen met 28-year-old Lana Shupak. The two eventually had a child, got married, and then had a second child. Bowen had entered the military to better provide for his family, but eventually left with a general discharge rather than an honorable discharge, which Bowen saw as a failing on his part. Shupak would later note that Bowen seemed like a completely different person once he returned from Iraq. The couple eventually got a divorce, but Bowen continued to co-parent his children. In May 2000, Zach Bowen joined the U.S. Army, serving in both Kosovo and Iraq. During his time in the military, Bowen received a NATO medal and the Presidential Unit Citation, which is often given to soldiers who show extreme bravery in the face of armed forces. Bowen also spent time at the Abu Ghraib prison during his tour in Iraq. Bowen eventually returned to New Orleans after his time in the Army and took on various bartending jobs. Despite Bowen's friendly outward persona, those close to him claim he struggled with the memories of his time in Iraq. Bowen's friends would later recall he had a terrible memory of a young girl and her family who were killed in a bombing. It's been speculated over the years that some of his behaviors, including violent outbursts directed at Hall, were the result of post-traumatic stress disorder, which affects a high number of veterans. Which,
well, we know all about that.
We know.
Talked all about that, too.
Yeah, I know. And that's something I do feel sorry for our father about, that he had a shitty childhood, too, but he didn't have to turn around and make our lives shitty, too. So I kind of have mixed feelings on PTSD in general, because I have PTSD from several things in my life, too. And I've known other people that have gone through PTSD, and it's caused them to become a different person. I mean, just the military in general, not even seeing, you know, wartime or time in other countries that, where they're having to deal with situations like that. Like, the military, we have one particular friend that I have in mind when I'm thinking about this. You probably know who I'm talking about. That came back a completely different person after the military. And it's just, it's a problem, and the government doesn't, there's VA in place and there's money in place for people who have been in the armed forces and stuff, but like,
it's not enough.
It's not enough.
It's nowhere near enough. It's shit. I mean, honestly, like, I'm glad there's things like that in place, like you said, but they're nowhere near what these people deserve to what they've been through. I mean, yeah, they signed up for it in most situations, but that shouldn't just mean you signed up for it, you deal with it. Here's the consequences of fighting for your nation. Yeah, I mean, it's shitty just going to some of those VAs with our dad and just knowing the mental. I can think of like three people that they're like my age that have committed suicide, PTSD after leaving the military. So, I mean, the biggest one being, you know, Ronnie, who literally scarred the nation at this point by committing suicide on Facebook. Like, it's just, it's so fucked up that they don't get the treatment they need for that, you know, like, to feel like they have to go that far. And I mean, I guess we're just fortunate
that it's just not readily available or easily available, because, you know, I think we have like a small VA office here, but you have to travel about an hour and a half to 2 hours away to go to a VA hospital for treatment.
A lot of times, like, it's like, you're military, you need to be manly man, son. Like, it's for them to seek treatment for the mental anguish side of it, or PTSD. Like, it's just like all mental disorders are still, you know, not heavily talked about. I mean, obviously we've made strides. Like, you couldn't talk about half of what people talk about these days. Like, I have ADHD with a side of autism, you know, like, people talk about it now. So I would hope that eventually they will have the comfort of coming out and talking about PTSD a little more, but I just feel like it's not there yet. I feel like there's still the stigma of like, manly man, you should be able to fight a war and come back and live a normal life. That's stupid.
Well, and the previous generations just didn't talk about it at all. Like, just,
yeah,
completely shut down. Because I know my ex-husband, his grandfather was in one of the world wars, I can't remember,
but two, I would assume,
but he just wouldn't talk about it at all. Like, he just, not a word.
Yeah.
But then you get people like our dad who goes around talking about it all the time, because he's mom, and that, you know, different strokes, but it took him a long time to get help too, because I mean, he didn't start seeking out help till I was like well into my teens.
Well, even then, he doesn't talk about his part in the war. He talks about Vietnam in a general, like, overgeneralized sense. I don't really, the only things I've ever heard about his time in Vietnam, like his actual personal experiences, is anything to do with the photos he had, and anything else came from like documents from court when he was fighting for 100% disability. Like, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I think I read a letter. I can't remember who he was even writing a letter to, but he had written a letter to somebody that kind of told his story and stuff, and I read that. Yeah. At some yeah. point, but
I think that was for the court cases. And yeah. that's ridiculous that he had to go to court multiple times and explain his trauma just to get fully covered on disability. And I mean, granted, I think in Dad's case, he's not 100% disabled because of the war, but it absolutely
exacerbated the stuff that was yeah. already there.
Yeah. He was already kind of a horrible person from everything I've heard, you know, because basically, you know, we obviously have only known Dad after the fact because we were both born after the war. But just based on our mom's recollection and his siblings and our grandparents, sounds like he was kind of always mean and shitty. So, yeah.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to point out is, like, I was talking to our mother about me having HS, and she started doing research. It's like, I forget what the technical term is, but I get cysts all over my body, and I have them pretty much at any given time. I have several cysts in my body, and they come and go, and some get infected, and it's awful, and it's uncomfortable, but it could be worse. So I try not to complain too much about it, but I happened to talk to her about it, and she started doing research. She's like, it's been linked to Agent Orange. And I'm like, well, that just figures, because a lot of the stuff that's wrong with me is actually stuff that has been linked to Agent Orange. And Dad did get some Agent Orange exposure, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Well, that's a good, there's a good chance that a lot of what's wrong with us, just like you said, in general, I think the reason I'm hit a little less is simply the years between Vietnam when he was there to you, to me, that I think that's the only reason I'm just a little less ailed, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But Mom's like, well, you should be able to get some kind of compensation for that. I'm like, that's not how this works. Yeah. I've already tried to look into that before, and they're just like, there's nothing I can do for you. You're not the actual person that got exposed. We're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Even though the person that I emailed about this whole thing acknowledged that it was that, you know, my PCOS is a like scientifically proven thing that's connected to Agent Orange, like they still are like, we don't care, doesn't affect us yeah. any.
Like there's no lawsuit against us yet to make us start paying people, so
there probably has been at some point, it just hasn't yeah. made waves.
Yeah,
but
to be fair, we got bigger problems than that at this point in the world.
Yeah, true story. But I was just putting my 2 cents on that, because I feel like I should get some kind of compensation, because I can't have children. I'm having all these issues, and I've had problems working my whole life. I pretty much only worked on and off my whole life, because I'll get sick and miss work and end up having to quit, or you know, have to choose quit or be fired because I've missed so much, that kind of thing. That's happened to me so many times. Anyway,
no,
we got way off track.
Well, but it was kind of still on the same track. I mean, it went from mental to actual physical issues, but the fact remains, vets,
that the government should take more of an initiative to do stuff about the physical and the mental issues that are caused by them.
And I'd be interested to know how this guy was prior to his military as well, if he was always this wild. Because I mean, that kind of just like we were just talking about with Dad, it obviously made him worse. What was he like before? And was he like a perfectly good person before the war? Because I feel like they all have, like, one of the things I hear about is sometimes when they come back from extended tours and things like that, that they feel like war was real world and the real world is now not real, if that makes sense. So it's hard for them to associate to the real world anymore.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's why they act out the way they do, is because they just don't think it's real.
Yeah. But anyway, I think we're going to wrap this episode up and we'll continue with the second part of this story in the next episode. You'll have to wait 2 whole weeks and we'll be recording it in 5 minutes from now, but still you'll get it. Anyway, see you next time.
Yeehaw.